network adequacy provisions, primarily based on Minnesota's 20-year-old HMO standards to ensure enrollees have access to care, accreditation to require a broad assessment of health carriers, ensuring health plans meet the defined level of quality, service areas to ensure geographical areas where a plan can be sold and that they cannot be discriminatory, quality improvement for continuous improvement assessments focusing on specific processes. Further federal guidance is still to come in this initiative, and we'd be able to accommodate that, as well as open enrollment periods, and it outlines an annual open enrollment period in the individual market in order to prevent adverse selection. So that's broadly what the bill does. If you look at the fiscal note, it's really quite minimal. It's $12,000 in the upcoming biennium that would be attributable to Department of Health work in their some of their oversight rules, and would be covered by the MNsure assessment, so it wouldn't even come out of the bottom line. But with that, one of the amendments adopted in the last committee regarded pediatric-only dental plans, and there's a couple of technical changes. I would offer the A5 amendment.
If we could have the amendment distributed, please.
Okay,
Senator Lurie.
I think most members have it. I'll describe the A5 amendment. There's a couple of technical changes, and then again that pediatric-only dental. So lines 1.3 to 1.8 are technical changes to Chapter 62M appeals, and it clarifies that the changes do not affect the appeal rights of state public health care program enrollees, just a technical clarification. Lines 1.9 through 1.33 are further requirements for limited scope pediatric dental plans. They really permit a plan to be discontinued and replaced with a same or similar plan if approved by the commissioner. The amendment adopted last week applied to pediatric dental plans, and some of the guaranteed reissue had a couple of issues. This begins to clarify that. I do believe there's possibly a little bit more stakeholder work on this one, but this brings it forward significantly to allow for the guaranteed renewability piece to work a little bit better. The balance lines 1.34 through 2.1 are technical changes to the essential community provider designation for Children's Hospital. This would make it the same as is in the omnibus bill. So with that, I would move the A5 amendment and stand for questions. I do have the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce who've been very helpful in the negotiations with plans and advocates, and really deserve a lot of credit for helping bring a lot of consensus around this issue.
Okay, Senator Lurie has explained the A5 amendment. Is there further discussion on the amendment? And has moved the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Lurie.
I'd move House File 779 as amended be recommended to pass.
Right. Is there further discussion on Senator Lurie's motion? Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I just want to acknowledge Senator Lurie. I'm always pretty tough on these kind of bills because of where my district is located. It's, you know, got a lot of people in the healthcare industry right on the edge of United Health Group, and Medica's there, and a hospital very close by. So I just follow these issues very closely, and I have been impressed with how Much collaboration has gone into this bill, how much the department has worked with the folks. And so this was a scary thing, looking at how were these marketplace rules were going to really net out and the potential impact. I've also been impressed with the governor's selections with regard to the overall makeup of the advisory council. So just thanks very much, and I'm pleased to support it.
All right. Senator Lurie moves that House File 779, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Lurie. Members, I know all of you said when the committee started today, I'll bet this thing proceeds without a glitch. After yesterday, you were wrong. We have a problem. Mr. Nauman and I have had some conversations, and Senator Nino, I wanted to talk to you privately, but I apologize. But on Senate File 901, the amendment, Senator Nino, that you offered has a fiscal impact that we had not taken into account. And I want to have some discussion about it. I think, to be fair, since most members were here, and Senator Weger, your committee's finished now, is that correct? I guess I'd like to recess the committee for 10 minutes because I think almost everybody was here. And I think, to be fair to Senator Nino and Senator Peterson, I think you know, Senator Fischbach's not here. For instance, I think we, again, this had this, Senator Nino, I can tell you just my conversations with Mr. Nauman, he said, I'm not quite sure this thing works. So we have a bill that's out of balance. So I'm going to ask for further discussion about it. But let's recess for 10 minutes, and then we can get going again, but only for a few minutes so other members who were here can get back. So we'll be back 10 minutes from right now.
They don't, Great River Energy doesn't want. Sean, was that your family that came in? We would have, you know, shot it.
Okay, if we can reconvene. Here's the difficulty with, and Sarah Marty, if you might come back to the table. Obviously, Senate File 901 is still in the committee. The committee report has not been processed. There was an amendment added of Senator Nino's, and in discussion, realized that there is the possibility of a fiscal impact that we did not discuss. And so it's one of the problems is things start happening quickly. Usually we catch that stuff. But I guess I'd like to put the bill back in front of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, so then I move to reconsider the vote whereby Senate File 901 was recommended to pass.
Okay, on the Tomasoni motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion carries. Okay,
then, Mr. Chairman, I would move to reconsider the vote whereby the 848 amendment was adopted.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Mr. Chair, what?
Senator Nino.
After we reconsider, we're going to have debate, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I didn't miss the opportunity.
Don't worry about that.
Mr. Chair, we reconsidered, so we have the bill in front of us.
Right. That's correct.
So this is the time for debate.
Well,
you were calling for the final vote.
No, I wasn't. I was calling for the reconsideration of the amendment, not
right.
The final
okay.
vote.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Senator Tomasoni.
Okay, so I move to reconsider the vote whereby the 848 amendment was adopted.
Okay. All those in favor of the Tomasoni motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Now, so we have the amendment back in front of us. Mr. Nauman, can you indicate, I think you wanted to indicate what might be the possible difficulty on the fiscal side of it. I think, Senator Tomasoni, you might have a comment, but what caught my attention was the possibility of a fiscal issue with the amendment that we had not caught.
So, Mr. Chair and members, I want to preface all these comments with we have not fiscal noted this language, so there is nothing definitive here, but we can say that there is a requirement on the Commissioner of Commerce as well as a requirement in the amendment on the PUC. What's unknown is the degree to which those entities would come back and say that there would actually be a cost. It's possible that the act of preparing a presentation and a plan on the part of the Commissioner of Commerce to the PUC would generate an overall cost. It's possible that the PUC's efforts in dealing with that plan in front of it would also generate a cost, but it's also possible it wouldn't.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, given all the discussion that we've had in this committee about fiscal notes and the accuracy of the fiscal notes, I would hate to send the bill out of here that's been changed so that the fiscal note isn't accurate, first of all. And then, and secondly, I do believe that when Deputy Commissioner Grant made his comments, I think he said that this is not something they normally would do, and maybe I missed that, or maybe the committee missed it. But given those two issues, I think we should vote this amendment down. And then I think the third thing is I think we already dealt with this amendment on the Senate floor, if I'm not mistaken, and we defeated it on the Senate floor also. So, Mr. Chairman, I believe we should defeat the 848 amendment and then pass the bill out without it.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To go in a little more detail, and if there were any members that weren't here at the time, I can't remember if we had a full committee or not. this amendment, basically, put it in layman's terms, just would require that the expenditures out of the appropriation here for the subsidies for solar, I believe is what it was for, that it would meet a cost reasonableness test. And to turn that around, it would make sure that we're not spending this money in an unreasonable way. So just be aware of what the amendment does. The department needs to come up with a plan to spend this money anyway. The amendment does not require the department to come up with a plan. The commissioner at the table didn't say, well, this might cost us some money. He did say, well, this isn't something we would normally do, but this is a new appropriation, so they don't have this money to spend right now anyway. But they have to come up with a plan already. Now, if there's a cost associated with this, it might be 1 or 2 hours of work of somebody typing up a letter to send over to PUC, and PUC might have to spend an hour or two reviewing the letter and sending a response back saying, yes, this meets the cost reasonable test or not. I guess theoretically you could say there's maybe a couple, 3-4 hours of staff time, and if we're going to kill an amendment for a $200 cost, when the amendment is going to make sure that we spend this money in the most reasonable way possible rather than an unreasonable way, then this committee really needs to think about what it's focused on.
Well, Senator Nino, that your comment's not inappropriate, but where we have, I mean, one of the problems I have with how we've handled finances, and I can be as guilty as the next person, is where we assume costs within an agency. You know, I'm happy to try to do it. Usually, I try to get some sign off from the agency before proceeding. But again, there have been errors, and again, I was alerted at least in this instance where that might be a problem. Your suggestion is you think it's minimal. Mr. Nominus expressed some concern. I don't know if Mr. Grant has an opinion or not, or Senator Tomasoni, if you have any thoughts about it. But I think I saw, yeah, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I heard Mr. Nauman indicate is that there was a possibility of cost, but he really wasn't sure. As Senator Nino has indicated, the department's going to have to come up with a plan no matter what. So it would seem to me that if, in fact, there is a concern over whether or not this amendment, which we have already adopted, puts the bill out of balance, then maybe what we ought to do is get ourselves a fiscal note so we can accurately answer the question rather than talk in terms of possibilities. So with that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I would move to lay the bill on the table until we can get ourselves a fiscal note.
All right, we have Senator Newman's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. All right, we still have Senator Tomasoni's motion in front of us. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it's accurate to say the PUC is there to help protect consumers. Is that an accurate statement, Mr. Chair, or Senator Marty?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, by the way, in terms of the cost would not be on the department. They'd be on the PUC, and I'm not arguing that that's a huge cost. You can see they're talking several $100,000 for PUC things in the bill, and this would be one more. But the issue here, perhaps, is that the point of these funds is to increase use of solar production in Minnesota, and as I told you earlier on, that wind power, the way this is wording, that maybe I don't know how the PUC would rule, but you know, if the goal is simply renewable electric energy resources at reasonable cost, they may argue that wind is cheaper than solar. So I mean, that's one logical thing the commission may do, but the whole point of this incentive is to encourage made in Minnesota solar products, not wind or other things. And so this is specific to here, and I don't know how the commission would rule, but as Mr. Grant did say when the amendment was first proposed, he said this is not what the department normally does. They usually set up the things here, and going to the PUC on something like this is not traditional operating type of thing.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, this is not an unreasonable request. You know, this bill is asking ratepayers to pay for electricity twice, once through purchase rates and now a second time through a bonus subsidy. And what is your objection to having the Public Utilities Commission, whose sole purpose is to review these rates? That is not an unreasonable request, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, a majority of the committee supported adding this amendment, and that's why it was added earlier. And so I'm very confused about the opposition to Senator Newman's offer or motion to lay it on the table, because I would think that if the majority of people supported it earlier, that we would want to find out what the fiscal note was and hold it over. But I guess I'm just trying to figure out if it's really the fiscal concern or just because a Republican amendment went on by accident. And so just kind of wondering, because we've had these redos, we're going to have more redos, I'm sure. And I just think this made sense to most people earlier, and confused why we're having to reconsider it now.
Further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
The Commissioner, Mr. Chair, under current law, this does not, the RDF expenditures must meet this test now, and the PCA must verify. Isn't that true?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, those portions of the Renewable Development Fund that haven't been legislatively directed do go before the PUC. In the case of legislatively directed funds, they normally do not.
Okay. We have the amendment again in front of us.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Nino.
I'm sorry. If there was someone else that wanted to talk, I can wait.
I didn't see anybody else's hand.
Before we vote, I just want to remind members the amendment, the language that we adopted, is that we're asking the PUC to issue an order if it finds that the funds will be expended to increase market penetration of the within the state, so Minnesota, of the renewable electric energy resources, and that it's a reasonable cost. If we strip this amendment out, what you're saying is we don't have to spend this money to increase the market share of renewable energy. We could spend this money and get a lower market share at an unreasonable cost. I don't know why anybody would oppose this amendment. Now, if there's there's some nominal fiscal cost, let's just put it on Mr. Nauman's computer, Mr. Chair. We've got 20-some million on the bottom line, right? Let's pull $200 out of there.
Further discussion. Chair Thomasoni.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just renew my motion because
your motion carried.
Yeah.
So the motion we have now in front of us is Senator Neal's motion on the amendment.
Okay.
I think you're...
I'm speaking against it because, Mr. Chairman, the discussion that we've had in this committee about fiscal costs and how the other side of the aisle has been completely worried about making sure that everything is totally accurate, and then this thing gets put on a bill that we don't know the cost of, first of all, and secondly, we don't exactly know what the wording in this thing means and how commissions might require or even react to it. And so I think there's a pretty clear indication in the bill of where we want to go. And I don't know that this amendment gets us there. So, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate it if the committee voted no on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. What, Senator Fischbach? I'm sorry. Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thomasoni, I believe that Senator Nienau offered a solution to that issue you had about the finances, where there is a bottom line. A lot of bills have gone through here that we've just put on the bottom line and not necessarily attributed to any of the omnibus bills. And so there was a solution offered to the finance issue that obviously is going to be rejected because it's a Republican suggestion.
I'm not sure that it's because it's a Republican suggestion, Senator Fischbach. I think it's pretty consistent with the Republicans have been requesting in this committee all along that they not have any kind of fiscal notes that are not accurate. First of all, But secondly, I think that Commissioner Grant made a very good point that this is not the way we normally do things at the department, and I think we should continue to honor that tradition.
Sarah Fishbach.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, we are allowed to change the way things happen at a department. We are allowed to give them instruction and tell them how we would like to see things happen. So I think that argument is invalid, given that we are allowed to change things at departments, just not do things everything as usual. And I will point out, there have been bills that have gone through where the fiscal note is not completely accurate at the time that it's passed out of this committee. We've done that several times. We've changed we've ignored fiscal notes, said they didn't reflect the accurate numbers, things like that. So yes, maybe the Republicans have been trying to point that out, but the committee has not held to that.
Certainly no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just for the committee's sake, I will remind everyone that last year the Senate voted 65-0 to give the PUC oversight of all RDF expenditures.
All right. We have Senator Nino's motion in front of us on the A48 amendment. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nino.
I'm going to ask for a roll call.
All right. There's a roll call that's been requested. Is there further discussion on the A48 amendment? If not, the clerk will take the roll. Chairman votes no.
Anderson. Yes. Bonoff.
No.
Champion.
No.
Dibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen. Latz.
No.
Limmer.
Yes.
Lori.
No.
Miller.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
Nino.
Yes.
Pappas.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Zaxhog.
No.
Sieben. Stump.
No.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrum. Yes. Uyghur.
No.
Again, a vote of 9 affirmative, 13 noes. The motion fails. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bodden has ever so diligently been working on a solution to the concerns with this amendment, and I'm hoping he has language ready for me so that I can offer an oral amendment now to the bill.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nino, I think the question I have for you at this point is, given that the committee has rejected the A48 amendment, it's going to be a little difficult to cross-reference the savings that might result from your amendment.
Mr. Bodden, what I was looking at is since we're talking a cost probably in the hundreds of dollars, is language that would reoffer the language that was just now pulled out of the bill, reoffer it with language that would pay for it by reducing the appropriation for expenditures. My argument, and while you're working on that, Mr. Bodden, my argument for that, Mr. Chair, will be that by spending a few hundred dollars less in subsidies, but ensuring that we do it with a cost reasonableness test, that we will get more solar as a result. If we spend a few hundred dollars less, we will probably get thousands of dollars more in value. It's kind of like, Mr. Chairman, it's kind of like going to Cub to buy your bread instead of going to the local Super America. You're getting a better value when you buy at Cub. And this is what I'm proposing to do is spend an extra 5 cents in gas to go to Cub to save 50 cents on the loaf of bread. And that is what the language that I'm looking for, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bodden.
Or Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Put it another way, buy your panels in China, don't buy them in Minnesota, and do have a communist country provide our panels for us and not have a businesses right here in Minnesota producing the panels. That's what you're saying.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lori.
Following up on Senator Tomasoni's point.
I agree with you.
Okay, that, given that cogent argument of Senator Lori's, is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, so having heard what Senator Nino would like to do, I could propose the following language for him. And this would be an amendment to the A51 amendment. And on page 1, after line 18, insert a new paragraph C that would provide, the Commissioner of Management Budget shall cancel the amount of the appropriation in paragraph A attributable to the savings resulting from the requirement to submit the payments under Minnesota Statute Section 216C.412, Subdivision 2, Paragraph B, to the Public Utilities Commission for a determination on reasonableness. The amount of the savings shall be certified by the Commissioner of Commerce.
Sir, you know, it's a little bit long for an oral amendment, but what? Well, Sir, you know?
Mr. Chair, I'm offering that language as an amendment to the bill, and I'll speak to that if you'd like.
If you could.
Mr. Chairman, I mostly made the arguments previously while Mr. Bonner was trying to finalize that language, but here's an additional point that I will make. This bill, and particularly this provision in this bill, is about expanding renewable energy, particularly solar. And as Senator Latz, who's not here, articulated earlier, that's about, and I'm paraphrasing, these are not his words, saving the planet. It's about not using petroleum. It's about trying to stem global warming. If that's what this is about, then my amendment is good. If this is about jobs, well, then it should have been in a jobs bill. If this is about renewable energy and getting as much as possible and getting the best bang for the buck, getting the most solar for the dollars that we're spending, then my amendment is a good amendment. If it's about something else, then this isn't the bill it should have been in. It should have been in a different bill doing something else. So with that, you know, I will stop making the case. I probably know how the vote's going to go, but I will ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Nino has offered the oral amendment as presented by counsel. Now, it's a little bit lengthy. Does anybody wish to have it repeated, Mr. Bonner?
So, Mr. Chairman and members, this would amend the previous, the A51 amendment, which contained the appropriations, and it would add a new paragraph C that would state that the Commissioner of Management and Budget shall cancel the amount of the appropriation in paragraph A that is attributable to the savings resulting from the submission of the payments under Minnesota Statutes Section 216C.412, Subdivision 2, Paragraph B, and those are the payments we've been talking about, obviously, to the Public Utilities Commission for a determination on reasonableness. The Commissioner of Commerce shall certify the amount of the savings.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Well, my question was just to have him reread that again.
Okay. All right. All right. We have the amendment as moved by Senator Nino. Is there further discussion? And a roll has been called for. Clerk will call the roll. Chairman votes no.
Anderson.
Yes.
Bonoff.
No.
Champion.
No.
Hibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Limmer.
Yes.
Lori.
No.
Miller.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
Nino.
Yes.
Pappas.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Zaxog.
No.
Sieben.
No.
Stumpf.
No.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrum. Uyghur.
No.
On a vote of 9 yes, 13 no, the amendment fails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 901 as amended be recommended to pass.
Okay, we have Senator Tomasoni's motion that Senate File 901 as amended be recommended to pass.
Roll call, Mr. Chairman.
A roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll. Chairman votes yes.
Anderson?
No.
Bonoff?
Yes.
Champion?
Yes.
Dibble?
Yes.
Fishbach?
No.
Goodwin?
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen. Latz.
Yes.
Limmer.
Nope.
Lori.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
Nope.
Zaxog.
Yes.
Sieben. Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrum. Weegar.
Yes.
On a vote of 13 yes, 9 no, the motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Marnie, for coming back. Members, we have one bill left on the agenda, and that's Senate File 925, Senator Dibble. Now, let me indicate to members, you might recall some discussion, those of you who are on the Rules Committee, of whether or not there, and we had this discussion on the floor as well, whether or not there was a fiscal note relative to this bill. There was a preliminary fiscal note, and there was indication, and I'm one of the people who stated it, that we have not based legislation on preliminary fiscal notes. A fiscal note did show up on the bill. Senator Dibble then moved to have the bill sent back to the Finance Committee for purposes of the consideration of the fiscal note. Obviously, we have some policy in this bill, but Senator Dibble, I know the bill has been considered the Judiciary Committee, which I serve on, Senator Latz's committee, and we do want to have a couple minutes discussion of the fiscal note and the need for the fiscal note, why the fiscal note. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe the fiscal note is in your packet in front of you, clipped to the bill, 35 pages long. I have some folks here. So I have Nathan Morocco and Michelle Weber here from MMB, who can explain both the cost side as well as the revenue side. The short version is that much of the costs are distributed across all state agencies or many state agencies by their analysis that about 114 folks, couples, will get married who are in state employment, and then they'll, of course, have family members on the CGIP, on the State Employee Group Insurance Plan. And then, of course, when folks get married and when folks get divorced, they pay fees, and so that's attributable to some general fund revenues. The costs, of course, come from general fund as well as a number of other special revenue sources, like the Department of Transportation, for example. Their employees are paid out of the highway fund, so it's hard to really know with great precision where exactly the funds that we need to expend come from. This is in context, of course, in I think the employee benefits program itself is a 600 and some million dollar endeavor, and we're talking about $630,000 approximately in fiscal year 14 and $688,000 in 15. With that, Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Morocco can shed a little bit more light on the fiscal note, and then Ms. Weber can talk about some of the revenue that's generated.
Sure. If we could have a couple of minutes on the fiscal note, whoever would like to begin.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nathan Morocco. I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division. I oversee the state's Employee Group Insurance Program. I think, actually, Senator Dibble did an excellent job of providing the overview of the fiscal impact. We would assume approximately 114 members would come onto the plan. Obviously, as members come on, they're going to incur more services to the plan, and that equates to roughly $631,000 per year. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Rocco on the fiscal note? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, 114, pretty precise number. How do you come up with that number?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, the calculation is actually in the fiscal note, so we're using basic demographic data in terms of how many households in the state are currently unmarried and are currently of the same sex, and then we make some assumptions relative to what our current enrollment experiences are. And so, again, that is laid out in the fiscal note, but it is similar to the assumptions and actually the experience that we had back in 2003 when we did have a very brief period of offering domestic partner benefits in the state employee group insurance program. But it is, to your point, it is an estimate, based on what we're seeing for demographic information from the state demographers.
Sir Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Morocco, to follow up on Senator Westrom's question, when I look at the fiscal note, it looks like you're talking about a range of between 132 and 153, and from there you extrapolated and came up with 114. Again, tell me, what's the source of the information that gives you the range of 132 to 153? And I'm looking at page 4, the last paragraph of the fiscal note, if that'll help you.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Senator. So the demographic information in terms of how many folks in Minnesota are living both together as unmarried, opposite and same-sex couples, are that is listed in the paragraph above in the 2010 U.S. Census data. And so we do come up with a range, and we're simply just picking the midpoint of that range based on the census data. And then we are assuming, just like opposite-sex couples today in the CGIT program, not everyone who is married elects to cover their spouse. So we're roughly at about, I think it's about 76%, 76.69% of current CGIT opposite-sex spouses choose to cover that spouse, so roughly 23% choose not to. So that's why we then reduce, even though there may be same-sex couples in Minnesota, they may not necessarily choose to cover that same-sex spouse. And so we're simply making that, we're dropping then the number of eligibles to what we believe would actually be enrolled in the program. Again, it is an estimate, admittedly, and we're just trying to base it on our current experience in CGIT.
Thank you, Mr. Morocco. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, and Mr.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I think, and maybe Mr. Morocco can correct me if I'm wrong, I also know that the state had at least a brief experience when they provided health care benefits to domestic partners back in the Ventura administration. And I think there's some data that informs this fiscal note from that 1 year period of time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that is correct. We don't actually reference that in here, but we certainly apply sort of a reasonable test to this analysis, and it's similar to what we had experienced or what we would have expected back in 03.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, maybe you or your guests there can answer some questions. I noticed that as I looked through the fiscal note, there was no reference to judiciary budgets. Now, if we're expanding the number of marriages that in the state of Minnesota, we would also be expanding the court costs involving divorces, child custody, property resolution. Why isn't that included in the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Weber can help us.
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Budget Operations at Minnesota Management and Budget. And the courts were not asked to respond explicitly to this fiscal note. And so that's why there's nothing reflected related to them.
Mr. Chair, why not?
Mr. Chair and members, in the analysis of the original bill, in doing the assignment and the discussions that had occurred, we had primarily focused on the insurance costs as well as the marriage license fees. So had not taken the potential court costs into consideration.
Mr. Chair, I remember when we had discussed this on the Senate floor a number of weeks back, and I wanted to thank you for having this hearing today. You're living up to your reputation, Mr. Chair.
Well, I'm happy to do that for you.
I always like to sell the chair if I can.
It'll take a lot more than that, Senator Limmer, but go ahead.
Senator Ingebrigtsen said not to overdo it, so I'll take his advice. But I do remember specifically raising this discussion on the Senate floor about the cost of judiciary. I would have hoped that someone that was going to do the finance analysis would have picked up on that subtle hint of about 3 minutes of discussion on the Senate floor. The other question I had of MMB is, you made a reference on page 6 of local government impact, and didn't have much of a dollar amount that's recognized, and I was wondering if you could expand on that, of why that is not a definite accounting of costs.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, the local government impact, there is a separate process for requesting a local government note that is not governed by the fiscal note process. The fiscal note process is intended to be reflective of the state agency impacts and costs, not the local government. We do, however, discuss the potential costs to local governments. And so in this fiscal note have discussed it, but we traditionally do not quantify the costs of local governments. That's done through a separate process.
And Ms. Chair, could you tell me what that separate process is?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, it is a local impact note that can be requested.
And Senator Limmer, just in response to your question, you know, I've commented where we've had division chairs presenting omnibus bills to us with other preceding division chairs. In this instance, obviously, you chaired the committee that had jurisdiction over the courts. I've chaired previously in past chairmanships the division that's had jurisdiction over the courts. Senator Latz now has jurisdiction. And obviously, when we've had changes in law, whether it be family law, criminal law, whatever the law might be, we've never taken that into consideration in the fiscal note. It becomes reflected in requests from the judiciary for additional judgeships usually. And I think, obviously, I'm not sure when you chaired for the previous 2 years, if we weren't in the process of adding judgeships, I don't think. But I know when I chaired state departments previously with jurisdiction over the courts, there were requests for additional judgeships. And so if there were to be a significant amount of new activity, say in the family court, as a consequence of this, that cannot be handled by the current complement of judges, you know, if there was some significant change, I assume it would be reflected in a further request from the Supreme Court for new judgeships in whatever district. Normally that's how that's been handled, and whether it be this issue or where we've made changes in the criminal law, certainly. Certainly no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, based on that line of questioning and the response that the courts were not asked, and I think it's fair to assume that if we're going to have more marriages, we're going to have more divorces, and there will be more court costs, et cetera. Given the concern over my amendment that was pulled out of the previous bill, my assumption is, Mr. Chair, that you're going to lay this over until we can get that information from the courts. Is that correct?
Well, in this case, we have a very complete fiscal note in front of us that was requested, so we've had a response from...
Well, Mr. Chair, but we didn't get a response from the courts because they weren't asked. And there might, to use the words of Mr. Nauman, there might or might not be a cost, and that should be a concern for us based on my amendment.
Sir, you know, I guess I would suggest that unlike your amendment, which came up within the past hour and a half, this is a bill that has been before the legislature since...
But not this committee.
Well, not this committee, but it's. But if you'll let me finish, this is a bill that's been before the legislature since almost the start of the session. And so if there's been a desire for fiscal notes from MMB, from the Supreme Court, a local impact statement, whatever, there has been months of opportunity to do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Serenino.
As you might recall, Senator Limmer and I tried to get this bill to this committee weeks ago, and you opposed it.
And that was based upon a preliminary fiscal note and not the fiscal note we have in front of us. And once this fiscal note, the final formal fiscal note appeared, I was in support of Senator Dibble's motion to send the bill to the Finance Committee for hearing. This fiscal note showed up, I think, late Friday. And we had the motion yesterday, Monday. We weren't in session Saturday. So the moment we got the fiscal note, we took action on it to have it sent to the Finance Committee. Oh. Senator Dibble.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just note for the record that preliminary fiscal note was requested under the auspices of Senator Limmer. It was released to him privately without being released to anyone previously. It was discovered in Rules Committee. Senator Limmer, I'm guessing, would have had plenty of opportunity since the release of the preliminary and the final to ask MMB to do something different with it. Mr. Chair, I do want to, as long as we're on the subject of putting information out, I do want to have a study distributed. It doesn't really relate to the fiscal note. We don't do dynamic scoring, but I have a handout. Just so folks can understand that there are two sides of this ledger, and this is some research that shows there's some some actual benefit to our larger economy if we're to pass this bill into law. It comes from the Williams Institute, and it shows just from the activity of folks getting married, weddings, additional weddings that will occur in Minnesota, that there will be a $42 million boost to the local economy just in the first few years, with $27 million in the first year alone. So I just want to make sure that people are aware of that.
We're having information distributed. Senator Dibble, can I just go back to your comment relative to Senator Limmer's question, line of questioning, and the discussion of fiscal notes? To be fair to Senator Limmer, I mean, the problem we have, and this is, I'll tell you, as chairman of the Finance Committee, we had this discussion over these last several years. One of the frustrations, and this is not to blame the executive branch at all, this is just the reality of maybe the legislative sessions, that we're here for a relatively short duration. We introduce bills in January, February, March. We inundate the executive branch with requests for fiscal notes. And so in terms of Senator Limmer producing the fiscal note in final status when it showed up in the Rules Committee, I'm not sure that's Senator Limmer. I mean, it's just kind of what happens with these fiscal notes. I will note with the fiscal note that several agencies have reviewed this. I think the fiscal note was requested at, Mr. Norman, you knew the date. It was,
Mr. Chairman, the original fiscal note request was March 12th.
Okay, so that's a couple months ago, and if you look at the fiscal note, you'll see all the agencies that have reviewed this, and that's just the nature of a process that I just have come to the conclusion, because I've had this discussion with this, three previous administrations, that this is a process where the fiscal note process and the work that the executive branch has to do just does not intersect very well with a legislative session of shorter duration. That's just the reality. So I'm sorry, Senator Dibble, I offered my kind of editorial comment on the fiscal note process.
So, Mr. Chair, there is some discussion about revenue, additional revenue, if you wanted to hear about that from Ms. Weber.
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and members, in addition to the cost that Minnesota Management and Budget has identified, we have also identified an increased revenue to the general fund. In fiscal year 14, that would be $190,000, and then in fiscal year 15 and beyond, it is estimated to be $10,000. That's based on the increase in the number of marriage licenses issued. The fiscal year 14 number is higher because of the expectation that there would be a higher demand for same-sex marriage licenses in the first year.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to finish the point on the point you're making with Senator Limmer, and in fairness to Senator Limmer, not quite so much fairness to you, Mr. Chair, is my point. And my point is that, yes, in fact, this has been on the radar for a long time, this session. And I'm quite surprised that it would be brought forward without having everything covered. I mean, we're talking a major piece of legislation here in the state of Minnesota. And we don't know what the dissolution of marriages is going to cost the state of Minnesota. We don't know a number. I did see a number someplace, but I did serve on the Judiciary Committee where we talked about judiciary budget, judiciary issues like this, and why they wanted increases and why they don't want it. You know, and part of that is because of family court, and family court does cost money, and I'm quite surprised that. We're not having that number brought before us as part of the fiscal note with so much time that has lapsed since March. And I know the chair has been over the years very, very critical, at least the last 2 years, and when he was in the minority, about us not having fiscal notes complete. And this is certainly not complete on such a major piece of legislation.
Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, let me do a little bit of arithmetic for you. Senator Dibble had distributed this estimated the economic boost of marriage equality. What it indicates is we predict that approximately 4,946 in-state same-sex couples would choose to marry in the 3 years. So if hypothetically we assume 3 years, we would have the same number per year. That's approximately 1,500-plus couples that would marry in a single year. If we assume a divorce rate over that those years at a high would be 20%. That would suggest 300 divorces, which I might add would take place in a subsequent biennium, we assume. 10 judicial districts, that would be 30 divorces per judicial district. I don't think you would see any need for new judgeships based on those numbers. Now, if you have some better statistics you can offer the committee, fine, but otherwise it's a sheer hypothetical.
Mr. Chair, I guess I really didn't realize that we were moving forward in this committee with that much of a hypothetical. I just, you know, we've always been about numbers here, and you've made it very clear that that's the way we should be focused, but I guess we can throw hypotheticals out there. I would think that 30 cases per district is going to cost some money. And that just should be simply figured in here. That has nothing to do with the merits of the bill. Don't get me wrong. It's just the fiscal aspect.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, as a practitioner in the courts, I can't believe 30 cases would cost any money. Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I have never heard, as we've looked at what the overall judiciary budget is, that we have gone to our religious institutions and asked them how many marriage certificates that they've given out, and then asked our MMB to calculate based on how many people get a divorce, whether or not they have an adequate supply of judges, and therefore whether or not we've appropriately budgeted for the judiciary. I think if we were looking at, you know, all of the various things that cost our society and that cost the courts, we would do a much different kind of budget analysis. We don't ask the schools how many, you know, kids are getting in fights to determine whether our juvenile detention centers are, you know, meeting the needs. There are different ways that we look at what our forecasted expenses are, and this is certainly not one of them that I've ever heard of.
Senator Britson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, to that point, that's exactly what we do here in the legislature. We don't go to the clergy and ask them for those kinds of things. We go to our we're talking about certainly some revenue coming in here. We're open to the revenue coming in with this bill. We're not open to what the cost could be. And again, I go back to this being a very, very major piece of legislation that's moving forward without having those hypothetical costs. I guess we're going with hypothetical costs to the judiciary. I just think it's
well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we discussed the fiscal note and all the rest of it. Fiscal notes are not based upon hypotheticals. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, the fiscal note has a little bit of data. So every year there's about 17,500 filings for divorce. And remember, people pay money that goes into the general fund for divorce filings. And the fiscal note anticipates 80-some additional divorces might occur as a result of same-sex couples being able to get married. I'd like to think that everyone falls in love and gets married for life, and that's certainly true in most cases. And believe me, in my community, it's, you know, we can overcome long odds to get together and commit our lives to one another. So I'm guessing we'll get divorced in fewer numbers, but that's an editorial. So, you know, when we're talking about in the context of 17,500 divorces, adding another 80-some divorces to that, which, by the way, pay money for divorce filing fees, we're arguing over de minimis
numbers. And legal fees, too.
We're probably spending more money sitting here talking about this than we would in whatever costs might incur from 80-some divorces out of almost 18,000 divorces per year.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having deja vu. Mr. Chair, you refused to move a bill out of this committee. You pulled it back and had a reconsideration because of a, to quote the chair, sheer hypothetical cost of maybe a few hundred dollars.
I don't believe I said sheer hypothetical.
No, you did. About a minute ago, I was quoting that. And maybe it would have been better to quote you in the context of here we are now with a, quote, sheer hypothetical cost of maybe a few hundred dollars.
I don't believe I used the word sheer.
Well, you can listen to the tape, Mr. Chair. You did. And if one clerk has 1 hour of overtime or two or three, we're going to get up to the same level of cost that was theoretically associated with my amendment that was on a bill that you refused to let out of this committee. But yet now here you are arguing that it's no big deal because it's a sheer hypothetical. Mr. Chair, I'm just wanting to call that to your attention and ask that you act consistently here in this same committee.
And, sir, you know, I thought the phrase sheer hypothetical you were using relative – I used that relative to your amendment. You're right. I didn't use that phrase relative to this debate. Yeah, you're correct. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I'd like to ask a question on the fiscal note itself. This is a 30-some page fiscal note, so it's and I freely admit I had difficulty reading them. So, on page 18, there is a fiscal note regarding the public employee's retirement that reflects no fiscal impact, and all it says on the next page is we do not believe this bill would have any measurable cost to Public Employees Retirement Association. And if I flipped back to page 30, and that deals with work comp, and again, there's no fiscal implications, and under assumptions, there is a reference near the top that talks about an employee's spouse may be entitled to dependency benefits. So I'm trying to group this question into sort of a lump sum. When folks get married, spouses are entitled to dependency benefits. It may be through retirement. It could be through work comp. And so my question is of either Senator Dibble or the two testifiers, why would there not be additional costs to the state of Minnesota if we are including this group of folks who will get married and potentially the spouse would be entitled to benefits either from work comp or retirement or something along those lines?
Senator DeLore, Ms. Morocco.
I'll defer to my testifiers.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, if you look at the Public Employee Retirement Association, so I'm looking at page 18 and page 19 where they indicated there is no fiscal impact. Traditionally, on the fiscal note process, we would allow an agency to indicate there wasn't a fiscal impact and not describe the reason or rationale why. So this is a case in which a good explanation of why there is not a cost is not defined. But if you look at some of the other retirement associations,
excuse me, could you go back to the explanation of why it's not there?
So
I didn't follow you. I'm sorry.
Previously, this gets a little technical. The system that we had would just allow an agency to indicate there's no fiscal impact, and then they don't have to provide an explanation. We have asked agencies and instructed them to provide an explanation. In this case, they just indicated they don't believe there is a fiscal impact. So I would need to contact the agency to understand specifically why. However, if you look at the Teachers Retirement Association,
excuse me, before you go, yes. Mr. Chairman. Would it be possible for you to go back and get us an explanation as to why? And that is the note that I've got written, is why. How come there isn't any kind of an explanation as to why there is no fiscal impact? If you could do that, I would appreciate it. And then go ahead and move on to the rest of my question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman. Yes, well, I can certainly follow up on that for you. If you look at page 22 and 23, for example, TRA describes in their assumptions why they believe that's the Teacher Retirement Association, why they believe, because they already have an ability to designate who would be the recipient of benefits. If you look at the Minnesota State Retirement System, which is on page 24 and 25, also under their jurisdiction, current law allows, this is the second paragraph under the cost to Minnesota State Retirement System on page 25, that it allows for it to be built in already if the employee were to die. And so they don't believe that there is a cost to expand the provision, that it's negligible for them, so they have not quantified a cost. And then going to your question about the Department of Labor and Industry with the workers' comp provisions, so this is back on page 31 of the fiscal note. They have indicated in their explanation that the number of deaths is at such a low rate, and so then if you apply that to the number of same-sex couples, that they don't believe that there would be an explicit cost.
Mr. Chairman, just an observation, and I really do appreciate your explanation. And candidly, when I look at the fiscal note, overall, we are really not dealing with a great deal of money, assuming the assumptions of the various state agencies are correct. I am just simply a little surprised that we see language in here that indicates we're automatically going to cover a new group of people under state retirements and work comp, et cetera, and that there is no cost to the state of Minnesota. It just surprises me when I see that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further questions or discussion? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, were you moving towards a bill or just on the fiscal note?
Well, the discussion in the committee is on the fiscal note, so whatever you'd like, Senator Peterson.
I have some questions for Senator Dibble on the bill when we're done with the fiscal note.
Well, again, I'd like to be careful again. We've had bills in front of the committee. We've a lot of discussion on what's in the bill, but the issue here is the fiscal note. But Senator Peterson, go ahead.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I mean, I guess should I interpret that as that you wouldn't want any questions about individual rights or religious liberty, that kind of thing? You don't want those questions in this committee?
I guess I would. I think the preference is not to get too far afield, but certainly if you have a couple of questions that you'd like to ask Senator Dibble, feel free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I have not been in a committee where you've presented this bill in the past. That's kind of where my questions came from, and I had not read it until last night and this morning. And so there's a couple things I was hoping to clarify, and I can see in the bill you've done some significant work on the religious liberty side, which I think folks appreciate. But from your perspective, do you believe that individuals or sole proprietorships, those types of businesses, should be able to choose, who they do business with? And, of course, the issues we've seen in the news relating to, specific marriages and the industry of planning weddings and that type of thing. And I'd be interested in your opinion on that and then where in the bill that you think that's addressed in terms of that that choice or that freedom. Or
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, thank you for the question, the opportunity to respond. The goal of the bill is not to extend new privileges or rights that are not already provided for, except for the obvious one, of course, to let folks get married, nor inhibit any existing rights and freedoms that folks have. And so you see, of course, in the language of the bill, a lot of text that reaffirms a lot of what's already true, that religious associations and religious belief and religious practice in all the manners and forms that are currently provided for and protected in society, in our system of government, in our laws, in our Constitution, already exist. The question you ask is, should there be a new right to deny services to folks based on who they are? And the bill does not provide for that. And it's really not about who can get married. It's about who people are. So really, the question to ask yourself is, where would we stop? Where would we draw that line? I mean, there was a time when Catholic bakeries refused service to Lutheran weddings. I mean, so the same principle applies. Where would we draw that line? We have specific prohibitions against discrimination in our Human Rights Act. We have very, very strong some of the strongest protections in our Human Rights Act for folks to practice their religious beliefs, for religious societies and organizations and faith traditions to carry out their practices, even beyond the walls and the confines of their sanctuary, reaching into their extension of services to the public in the nonprofit sector when those are a clear and direct function of their religious tradition, with their own resources. But when you're in the public sphere and you're a restaurant, you don't get to put a sign up in the window that says Irish people can't come in. So that's the operating principle in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, a follow-up on that specifically then for the religious freedom aspect. I see that here towards the end of the second, or towards the bottom of page three there. And one concern I'm continuing to hear from constituents is relate specifically to that religious organizations that might be more educational or more social, maybe is a word, or actually healthcare type services. Obviously, hospitals that have a religious foundation and have a, quite frankly, their bylaws and that type of thing that require they have agreements with various religious organizations to conduct themselves in a certain way. Or actually, another example might be a traditional religious college where they might not want to open up their married student housing to same-sex couples and that type of thing. Do you feel like your bill addresses those types of things?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, yes, a religious college, that's part of some of the protections we have in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. That's a little more extensive than you might find in a lot of other states. So housing, even employment at religiously affiliated institutions, is protected. They can decline to hire. They can decline to house folks based on that basis.
Mr. Chair, one last question. I basically on the last page of the bill on page four, lines 4, 6, and 7, relating to those religious institutions, it says if association, corporation, society, or educational institution does not receive public funds. So that, when I was reading through the bill, a note I wrote down here was like the student grant program. So, in a case where a student in Minnesota might get a student grant, would they be able to use that at a traditional religious institution or college?
Thanks,
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I believe, and I'll need an attorney to help me with this, but I believe in the case of the student grant, those dollars are considered to come to the student, not to the institution per se, so the religious college is still able to operate with a great deal of latitude.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Further questions from the committee on Senate File 925? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, on page 4 of the bill, at line 8, there's a section on rules of construction. And my question has to do with various references throughout Minnesota statutes concerning marriages and spouses. There would be, for instance, specific statutes on inheritance and probates and divorces and marriage and all kinds of things sprinkled throughout our statutes here in Minnesota. Have you had any conversation at all with the reviser of statutes as to whether or not or what the cost would be to go through our statutes and incorporate this bill so that the appropriate language is contained?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, this language doesn't require the statutes themselves to have language changes, but it simply, as I understand, provides direction. The goal of this language is to ensure that folks who are married and have kids, for example, in the marriage and have a relationship, a parenting relationship to those kids in the marriage, just by can't in the event of a dissolution, aren't able to shed themselves of their ongoing and continuing responsibilities to those kids. That's really the goal of this language. It was brought in as we thought through some of the potential implications. I view this as, again, establishing. I don't think this language is entirely necessary, but is really to send a clear indication that folks, just by virtue of gender, are still have the responsibilities that they continue to maintain in the event of a dissolution, especially with respect to kids.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Senator Dibble. And I do understand what you're talking about with reference to the rules of construction. Mm-hmm. And I think that you are correct that these kinds of language changes would have to be taken into consideration. But this particular subdivision just brought to mind or made me wonder, I guess, as to whether or not anyone has discussed with the revisor of statutes the cost of what it would be to go through our statutes to bring it up to date. I know that there is a revisor's bill that comes forward during every session, and I am assuming that the revisor's bill is not free. It takes state employees to bring our statutes up to date, and I'm just wondering if you've had any conversations with the revisor on that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Newman, I have not, because I haven't even contemplated undertaking a project like that. I would assume it would be pretty expensive, a few tens of thousands of dollars. I haven't contemplated that. I do know that Washington State, I think, just revised its statutes to get rid of old terms that refer to people in certain ways and gender terms and that sort of thing. Major project that was many years in the making. I just read about that, I think, in Governing Magazine a few days ago.
Senator Newman, if it's any comfort to you, it's my understanding from work with the revisor over the years that when a legislative session is finished, there's always some kind of updating. And my guess is that this bill would require significantly less updating of the statutes than a lot of the other things we do session after session. But I think as a matter of normal course, the revisor is prepared to do that no matter what happens during a legislative session.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I mean, as a matter of course, that's, of course, why we have the revisor's bill that comes forward. My concern on this bill is that this is a significant change, in Minnesota law, and of all of the relationships that are contained within our statutes, those of spouses and the married relationship really does carve out special laws, throughout all of our statutes. And that was the reason why I was asking the question, because this might likely be a bigger undertaking than normal for the revisor of statutes. And that's simply why I was asking the question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, you're bringing up perhaps the rules of construction, and it probably means that there's more than just stylistic changes. I'm more concerned about the substantive changes substantive changes that could be affected in law and the consequential costs that have not been truly discussed. Now, maybe it's impossible to consider the substantive changes that this law would affect. Case law, I'm not sure how it would affect. Does it affect the costs of the courts? Apparently, there's no costs if we listen to this discussion. But I think there will be. And I think there's probably no real way except over time to consider how costly this would be. Just changing, you and I both know that having served in Judiciary Committee, we wrangle around with definite the definite consequences of how we frame and how we write law and how it's affected in our courts. What advantage to one side or another could be affected if we miss a particular tense on the writing of law. So there will be not only a cost to a reviser, but I think that would pale in consideration of what the cost would be on how it affects case law and how it affects other aspects of a judiciary budget. And unfortunately, we don't have that analysis in front of us. That remains an unknown.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I think we've covered this, but this topic, but to Senator Newman, I just remind you of the governor's State of the State address where he talked about the next legislative session actually going through the statutes and revising outdated language. So I would think that if this bill passes, this could be something that could easily be included in that initiative that the governor has already talked about. I think he called it the unsession.
Yeah.
If you recall.
Okay. Further, Chair, Senator Lemmer.
On that point, Senator Sieben, then would you consider that perhaps the reference of wife or husband be considered outdated now? Because that's really what we're considering.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lemmer, I was just suggesting that if there are changes made this legislative session, that our statutes need to be updated to reflect those changes in the next legislative session. There's already been discussion about making some of those changes, and that's what any changes that are made this session certainly could be incorporated into that.
Further discussion on Senate File 925. If there's no further discussion,
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 925 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Senator Westrum.
Well, Mr. Chair, do you anticipate when this may come up on the floor, or when this issue is going to come before us?
Senator Westrum, I would have no idea. We adjourn May 20th, so sometime before then. But you'd have to ask Senator Bach.
Well, just before we take a vote on it, Mr. Chair, I would urge members to vote against it. I think this is a very significant change we are about to invoke in our state if we were to pass this bill. I think it would be in our best interest to not pass this bill to the Senate floor, which is ready for action at any time, and I would speak against the proposal.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, not a point of order, but I guess just a observation. We should have everybody here as we did yesterday. I would like not to see us to have to do a revote again. It's becoming the revote session, and I just don't want to do that again. Okay. Out of respect for Senator Dibble. Okay. So I think we're missing one, and I don't know where he is.
Senator Anderson is has not been here for quite a while. I'm happy if somebody knows if he's coming, but he left, I think, after Senator Marty's bill and hasn't returned.
I'm sure he hasn't decided his stance on this issue, so he's taking a while. I'm just kidding.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemmer.
Senator Anderson talked to me earlier before the hearing began, and he told me that he had other pressing business, that he could not be here for the duration of this session.
Okay, let's make sure the record notes excused absence for Senator Anderson. I appreciate that, Senator Lemmer. So understand that Senator Anderson is, based on Senator Lemmer's comment, not available. We have Senator Dibble's motion in front of us that Senate File 925 be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right. The committee is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Monday morning.